broadcasting from Hollywood, California. It's Grant's Rants, Hollywood Talk.
Johnny Depp is in a hell of a mess, on and off screen. The Obamas prepare to move from the White House to a new house. It's good to be Naomi Campbell, and we look at the firings and behind-the-scenes bloodshed on The View and The Real. That and more with David Adam Knoll right here. Let the ranting begin. I am joined by David Adam Knoll, founder and publisher over at AN Publishing. David, how are you?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
Doing great. Now, David is joining us from San Francisco, where he resides, and I've been really wanting to get him on the show because we talk a lot about daytime TV and pop culture, mainly on Facebook chat and things like that. We've known each other for a while, since 2012, and I thought that he would be great for the show because he's an innovator, he knows what he's talking about, he knows the landscape of TV, so why shouldn't he be on Grant's Rants? So, glad to have you on.
Oh, yes, and I'm glad to be here.
Before we get started, I wanted to address an announcement that I've been teasing regarding the future of Grant's Rants. I was recently on C-Spot Talk Marketing Radio Show with Grant's Rants alum and AfterBuzz alum Christy Olsen, Megan Stecker, and of course Fern Ronay. And over there, I talked about the future of Grant's Rants Hollywood Talk. The podcast will continue. And there's a new show, Grant's Rants Hollywood Live, and it's going to be premiering on a brand new app. It's a live stream app, BidChat, B-I-D-C-H-A-T. And it's going to be a new take on Grant's Rants. It's very exciting, and I hope you'll all join me in supporting it and checking it out. The app is not available yet, but you can go on their website, and you can sign up for early download and download the app when it comes out in June. And the show will premiere in June as well. It's a great thing. There's even an opportunity to donate to charity. So keep posted here, check out the podcast, and of course my Facebook page to see when those premiere dates will be happening. Now, David and I have talked for a long time, mainly about daytime TV and our distaste for it.
Yes, I have a distaste for it.
You know, I feel like we both grew up on it, so we know the good times, and we know the potential behind what could be, and unfortunately, we're given very, very little.
Yeah, and I have to agree. I have to agree that at this present moment, I mean, there's just not enough of these good stories coming out. I mean, you have the ABC and the NBC soap, Days of Our Lives and General Hospital are just in the toilet. You have Young and the Restless, where some of it's good and some of it's very bad. And Bold and Beautiful, it's the same way. Some of it's good and some of it's very bad.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, well, before we talk about soaps and what drew our attention to one another, because I looked back and we've been messaging each other on Facebook about TV since 2012. It doesn't seem that long. Mm-hmm. So we have a lot to say. Usually it's in text form, but we're going to put it all out there today on Grant's Rants. But first of all, we have to talk about Johnny Depp and what is going on with this marriage, all of the allegations. This has to be one of the messiest divorces I've heard in recent history.
Oh, yeah. I have to agree with you. Like, this is very, very messy. I mean, there's been plenty of messy divorces, but yeah, this one is a messy divorce, you know, about, you know, with such accusations going about. But it really isn't, in terms of, like, maybe, say, in the media and of these sort of celebrity status folk, it's just unheard of. But it isn't uncommon for people who are in what they call high conflict divorces to lock allegations against one another in order to try to get the advantage in the court. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this is going to go on for a long time. Johnny Depp, he's had it tough. His mother died. His film career has been doing poorly, one would say. And, you know, Alice, the movie that he just did, completely bombed. That's what Variety said. So, yeah, you can't really do much from there. There's so much that has happened to this man's life from May 20th onward. That's when his mother passed. He and Amber had already split at that time. The next day, she served him with court papers. Then she said that he was high and drunk and flung a cell phone at her. 2 days later, she filed for divorce, and then there's been nothing but venom spewed ever since. I have so many details here, but I feel like I'd be sitting here like reading the news, and there's so many facts, or not really facts, but so many allegations, should we say. So today she gave a statement to the LAPD because Johnny's lawyers really pushed her to do that, because she claims that she didn't want to say anything that would damage his and her character. But her actions speak louder than words. And, you know, usually most people don't jump to defending the person who's being accused. They usually side with the victim. And, you know, and that's what I usually do as well. I mean, you know, I don't have any tolerance for any type of domestic abuse or any type of abuse, really. But this scenario seems different to me. Are you smelling what I'm smelling?
Yes, I am. You know, one of the first things I thought about this is, like, you know, when someone is trying to get awarded, you know, a certain amount of alimony, a certain amount of money, you know, for a time period, that they usually heighten and make, they make allegations that may not be real. You have lawyers and attorneys who, you know, coach you, you know, particularly like if you're in divorce court, even if you and if you have kids, it's even worse. It's best to be between a man and woman, it's best to be the woman in that situation because you have the greatest chance of coming out on top. So, you know, it just seems like a lot. It just seems like, you know, she's likely a woman scorned who's angry and upset, and she wants to get what she can get out of this.
She's really pushing for it really hard. She has – there's a restraining order between the two now, and there's been guards at the house, and the guards said that they overheard her yelling at him to stop hitting her. She said, "Stop hitting me, stop hitting me." Then they came into the room, and she was seated on a couch, and Johnny Depp was about 20 feet away. So, just saying, like, it just doesn't look right. Now, you know, Johnny's past is what it is. I mean, he's got, you know, some touch and go moments of having a temper and things like that. So there's something there. And at the end of the day, she really does have all those bruises around her eye. So, you know, is that from the iPhone? Is that something else was inflicted upon her? The LAPD says when they went to go to the house when they were called, she had no signs of physical abuse, and there was no glass broken, nothing was destroyed. So she claims, well, they went to a different part of the house. They didn't go to the house where the altercation occurred. So it just doesn't look good for her, but she is going to push as long as she wants because she's really, really milking it. Like you said, she wants the most out of it. She wants 50-50 beyond that. She's entitled to 50-50, but she's beyond that in her requests. She wants his car, month-to-month support, and she wants him to cover all of her legal fees.
That's right. That's right. And she seemingly laid out what she thinks the value of, you know, his property, what he has in the house. I mean, somebody who's like, if you're in a domestic abusive situation, right, and that's the kind of situation you've been living in, and you want to exit the domestic abusive situation, when women or anybody who's in a domestic abusive situation get the courage to leave, they're not running around the house clocking how much everything costs, the dollars and all those sort of things. In fact, you know, a lot of women who were married to men with money but were in an abusive situation, many of them would just want to leave. Just, I don't care. He can have everything. I just need to get out of this situation, right? Yeah. I don't care about the money.
Yeah, I mean, and if she's entitled to 50-50, that should be enough. Like, that, fine, sure, get me out of this. Like, she should want to end the marriage as quickly as he does. And it seems like there was a statement released, like, he just, like, wants to just get past it as fast as possible. I mean, it couldn't make him look worse, really. But people are standing up for him. His friends and his ex-women in his life have all said that, you know, they've never experienced anything like that. So, no type of abuse. He seems to me to be a soft-spoken man. Now, people can be one way in the streets and another way behind closed doors, but he seems to be kind of a soft-spoken artist type. Maybe I'm just a fool, but that's what I get, vibes from him.
Yeah, I mean, unless he's Ike Turner or something, you know, I don't really know, you know, I can't really see. I mean, it's true. People can be different, you know, out in public and then behind the scenes. But I think some people can hide it very well, but you can often see, I've known people who were in domestic abusive relationships, and I could tell that the person was an abuser. Like, I had a sixth sense, right? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a sixth sense about the way they were together, sixth sense about that male individual. So, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. She could be, but at the same time, there's that big sinking feeling that when a lot of money is involved, and you have attorneys, right, who get inside your head, right, particularly, you know, individuals say, because the attorney wants to get their money, right?
Yeah.
Get inside your head and get all money out there. Then they will tell people, yeah, you know, say he raped you, say he abused you, say he abused the kids, right, even if it's not true. And I've seen data that shows like, you know, when they looked at like 50, I think it was like about 50,000 high conflict divorces, which is about average each year. And they would say that you would have, you know, the mothers, if they had children in it, making all kinds of accusations, domestic abuse, sexual abuse. And they would say about, say, 96% of the time, those claims were found to be false. You know,
wow.
You know, so yeah. I mean, yeah, these kind of things are troublesome either way it goes.
There was a great article on The Wrap that my roommate actually told me about. And it was about the like friends of his, and they knew that she was manipulating him, and they knew that she was no good for him, but they were intimidated. They were like, "You're Johnny Depp. Like, we don't want to be thrown out of your inner circle. Like, you know, we don't want to vocalize how we really feel." But I mean, you know, if they should have, if they were really decent friends and not just there for, you know, an after party, they really should have spoken up. LAPD is investigating, so we'll keep an eye on this one. I'm kind of invested in this for some reason. I just think that it's very dramatic. Well, from one marriage to a much better marriage, let's talk about the Obamas and just how they're so ready to be done. They're so ready to get out of that White House, and I don't blame either of them.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know what? I would say I know for everybody who's president, who has been president, will say that they never criticize the next president because they know what the toughness of what it is to, you know, be in office, whether it's 4 years or whether it's 8 years. So, you know, George W. Bush didn't criticize President Obama. President Obama won't criticize the next one, you know.
Right.
Clinton didn't criticize Bush, right? You know, it's just a tough thing. So, you know, I mean, you're on the world stage. Everybody knows who you are. You know, you can't win or lose either way you go, right?
That's true.
Everybody, so, you know, and then your wife, and you know, she probably can't wait to get away from all the media and cameras and all the attention all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, Michelle Obama is ready to go.
Oh yeah, well, his approval rating is so high. I'm glad to see that. After the presidency, they are going to head to a new home, and it's about 2 miles from the White House. And I looked at this house, and I think it's really something nice. They're going to stay there until about 2018. What is it? It's 8,200 square feet, 9 bedrooms. It looks really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's got a really old school feel, right? You know, it's got a very almost, you know, I want to say it's like an old English feel to it, you know?
Yeah, it's like a little bit Tudor style. Yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. Very Tudor, older. It is, so it looks nice. And I'm glad I decided to stay there until, you know, their daughter finishes high school. So,
yeah, it's really
good.
Something. According to Zillow, this new place is valued around $6 million, and they're going to rent. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be paying. This is according to Zillow. Who knows? The owner is a member of the Democratic Party, so I'm sure there might be a little bit of a discount. But it's listed at $22,000 a month. And Michelle's mom is still going to be able to stay with them. And it's like the perfect setup. There's like a full, complete gated courtyard, guardhouse. Like, it's almost like tailor-made for a like a politician, you know?
A high-profile house, you know, high-profile place. You know, and I'd like to mention this because you mentioned Michelle Obama's mother. And one of the interesting things about having, you know, the first black family was that black families, if you have money, you don't hire, you know, housekeepers or things to watch over your children. You have the mother, either the mother of the father or the mother of the wife, comes in and takes the role of the caretaker of the children, so that you still have that great familiar connection. So it's great that she's keeping her mother moving right with her into the next spot.
Yeah. I think that's great, too. I was happy to see that. Yeah, very important that the mother-in-law is in tow.
Yeah, yes, yeah. It is. Mother-in-law's in tow.
Yeah. I know one person that you wanted to talk about was Naomi Campbell. And we want to talk about her book. So let us know. Tell me what you're thinking. This book with this crazy 3D cover is something else.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yeah. Well, so she revealed on a British television series. It's like a primetime talk show. I can't think of the name of the show right now. But they're making about 1,000. They made 1,000 copies of this original book. It's real big in this casing. So there are two books in there. There's a photo book, and then there's more of a biography of her life, of her career as a model, and kind of her upbringing. And they're selling it at about they're selling each one at about 1,200. What's it like? 1,200. Yeah. You know, per book. And then afterwards, they're going to do a smaller reprint, which will be, they say, much more cheaper. I can't afford to get this original one, but if I could, I would. But this year she celebrates having been in the business for 30 years. You know, the pretty much the longest. Model in the industry, particularly among, you know, the supermodel label. So it's really exciting to really see that she, has lasted this long, right? You know, and she's continued to go. I mean, I think Naomi Campbell would die modeling. I mean, it's just something that she loves so much. It's such a passion of hers that she just really does it. So it's great to see that she has released this book. Now, I have her original book that she did back in 1997, which was called Naomi, and it was just like about an 80-page book of photos, right? Mm-hmm. You know, from that mm-hmm. time period in her career. So it was great to see her do a follow-up and put this out there. I'm just kind of wondering, when are we going to have the movie? When are we going to have Naomi Campbell the movie, right? Because she's got a story that would be very Academy Award-worthy, or at least Emmy-worthy.
I think that she is just never going to quit because she never ages. She looks fantastic. I think she's more relevant than she's been in years, mainly because of Empire. But she's like an it girl right now. She really is.
Yes, she is. And yeah, you're right about this. She's an it girl. And look, she has maintained Naomi Campbell came into the modeling industry before they got all heroin chic thin, right? And so she came in when thin was still being very healthy, right? When they have good toned bodies. And she's got, you know, an excellent body, right? It's not super thin, and you know, it is very well toned. She keeps it up. She does Pilates. She works out. She does all these things, and she just knows how to take a damn good fucking picture. You know, I mean, you know, she's just good at it. I mean, nobody's like her. I mean, you know, she's the only one I knew that got community service and then came every day dressed to community service in New York. You know, in just, you know, high fashion, right?
The very best. Yeah, I love that.
You're very enough to love that. And then her appearance on Empire, I was like, oh yeah, you know, it's good. Too bad she didn't get the chance to have a cat fight with Cookie.
Oh, I know. I thought they were gonna do a little more with her.
Yeah, I thought they were too, you know, but they didn't. So I mean, you know, nevertheless, I mean, like you said, Naomi Campbell has been I'll tell this to people. Naomi Campbell, the way she kept herself relevant through all these years was that every season she would change her hairdo, right? She would have a new hairdo, and she would wear that hairdo for the season, and all of a sudden she was like a fresh, new looking woman, right, as a model. And she would just keep going, and she's made some really good career milestones. She was the first black model that Ralph Lauren ever had as a spokesmodel in 1997. And that same year, they did like a double. They had Tyson Beckford as the male spokesmodel for Ralph Lauren for that year. And so it was like first time you've ever seen both a black male and female be the spokesmodel for a major high fashion brand. You know, and she was the first model on the cover of French Vogue. She was the first, at least black one. She was the first black model on the cover of a September edition of American Vogue. She's covered, I mean, in total, maybe 64 covers of Vogue around the world. So she has made some good. And altogether, she's covered close to 600 magazines, you know, the world around, been in like, you know, close to hundreds of ad campaigns, you know, walked thousands of runway shows, has the best walk in the history of this industry. Right?
Ooh, you're such a fan of Naomi.
Yeah, I am such a fan of her. Such a fan. And I'm always such a fan of somebody. I mean, yes, she's had her issues. Like, you know, she had, you know, after Gianni Versace died, she had developed an issue with drug addiction to cope with that, but she's been in recovery now for quite a while. She's had some anger issues in her life. We know about her famous cell phone incident and, you know, and all those sort of things. But she seemingly worked through that. But at the same time, this is a woman who would say, I'm going to get paid the same as Claudia Schiffer, right? You're not going to give me the same job that she does and pay me less than her. And sometimes she would be referred to as a bitch in the industry because she demanded respect. She demanded, you know, equal pay, right? She demanded what everybody else got. So I really respect her for that.
And even this weekend, she went out with Rihanna, and those two, the article said that they shut it down. Like, they shut down the whole, like, Soho district with people because just people were just fascinated that those two were going out to eat.
I'm sure they were. Now, yes, that is a twosome. And it's, what's interesting about the twosome is, when Naomi Campbell takes a photo and it appears in a magazine or it's in an advertisement, like, you know, she can sell clothes. Rihanna has become the fashion icon from the music industry who can sell clothes, right? So the two of these two people together are just like, it's like a power friendship or whatever they have going on there, a power association.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I hope someone's taking notes and, like, finds a way for those two to do business together because they could dominate, like, every generation. We must talk about more daytime, and we need to talk about a little bit about The View, because I like to talk about this because, you know, I rant about it constantly, and I need to just talk about this new contract. Whoopi Goldberg, she's officially on my list. I'm so sick of her. I find her to be incredibly lazy on this show. She had a contract to $5 million, was a pay or play. We've talked about it on the show. Now she's signed on for half the price. So just for 1 year, she's doing $2.5 million, making that. She's only shown up to work 4 times a week. She's not doing anything extra. No publicity, no Fridays, no live streaming, unlimited outs. I mean, this is all alleged, but, you know, because ABC doesn't comment on contracts, but this is what I'm seeing, this is what I'm reading, and this is what makes sense to me. So, you know, I don't know. To me, it's just like that. Not only is it time to get rid of the show, as I've said time and time again, but it's time for her to go. Go do something else. The show isn't a good look for you. What are you doing?
Well, it's interesting that you say that because she is doing a lot of other stuff, right? She's executive producing a show about people transitioning. I think it's male to female transgenders doing transitioning. She's got her pop products company, that they're making stuff out of. I think it was hemp and marijuana. Yeah. They're using that, making stuff that going on. I've always thought that Whoopi Goldberg should, you know, go back to, you know, either do a couple movies. I mean, she has done some small stuff in movies, or get another sitcom or something on television, you know, and just get herself back out there and network. Because she's a wonderful actress. She can do drama. She can do comedy.
I do agree with that. I like her as an actress, as like a personality. To me on the show, she's tired and she's lazy and she phones it in. So there's just no place for that on a talk show, especially when you're in a moderator position. Again, this is all alleged, but come on. I mean, when there's smoke, there's fire. I always know what's going on over there anyway. Sonny Halston and Sarah Haynes are going to be joining the show. Whoopi campaigned for Sarah to come on the show, and she campaigned against Paula, the only one on that show that's an actual real journalist and has a brain.
So is Paula still going to be there?
Paula's still there, but I think it's disgusting that Whoopi would allegedly go out of her way to try to get rid of her. I mean, come on. And then ABC treated Michelle Collins terribly by cutting her down to 1 day a week. You know, they didn't include her in any of the group episodes, but yet they had a baby shower for Sarah Haynes, who isn't even on the show. So it reeks of, I mean, all this stuff, it all adds up to me.
I could take or leave Michelle watching it, because I just thought that Michelle was always trying to, you know, she was more like following the mob, right? You know, whatever the group said, you know, she was not going to try to deviate too much from that. So I didn't feel like she really brought much of her own personality or anything to it, you know, at all. But I love Paula, you know, and I'm glad she's still there. I like Paula because she has a point of view not just a point of view. You said she's a journalist, so Paula View will say, "But no, here's what the facts say, right?"
Right.
So bring that in there. All right.
Yeah. The facts are a recurring character on The View. They only come out about once a month.
Uh-huh. Yeah, once a month. Once a month. Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. You need that.
Yeah, you need that when you're under the umbrella of ABC News, just saying.
But,
ABC denies the whole thing, and they say, what else is new? People love to speculate about the co-hosts. We're lucky to have terrific guest co-hosts fill in when our talented co-hosts are busy with other projects. It's all chemistry testing. Anybody could see that. So, I mean, you know, this is not the first time ABC's released a statement, and then 2 weeks later, it's all everything they're being asked is true to, like, the final sentence.
Candace and Raven are going to be out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, it's time for them to go. I mean, it's time for them all to go. I mean, it's just it's such a desperate, trashy show at this point. I mean, unless if you put someone on there like Ann Coulter, who really is just going to piss people off and be that conservative voice, like that extreme voice that's going to be super polarizing. If they don't want to do that, then there's no point in having an opinion-based show. And I'm not a fan of Ann Coulter. I don't agree with giving her a platform. But CNN and Fox News and The View has just disagrees with me because they give her a platform. So why not put her on the show that's failing and dying? Let's talk about someone else's career in daytime. Tamar Braxton. She's going to have a gap on her resume coming the fall because it doesn't look like she's going to be on The Real. I know you have done a lot of research surrounding this. So what can you tell us?
Well, yes, I have. Okay, because I wanted to find this out. So, what allegedly happened was obviously Tamar was let go from the show. She was fired. This is what it was said as fired. But then you know some of the media outlets reported you know it was a mutually exclusive agreement, which means you were fired, but they just let you leave on you know on your own terms, right? You know, sort of out of Alcalina. So. What was said was several things. Number one, Tamar Braxton had a diva attitude, right? You know, that, you know, behind the set, right? That there were incidents where she yelled at producers, screamed at producers. And one time they were playing a game on the show and she lost the game. And when, you know, they cut, she was visibly upset, right? Like you're just playing a game. Who cares whether you win or lose, right? But also that, you know, her behavior and her demands were extremely high. Now, her husband, who has also a production credit on the show as a producer, was the guy who was kind of being the go-between, right? So he was kind of – he was going to the other producers and the other executives, the studio heads, and kind of saying, you know, fanning out the flames, right? Mm-hmm. And they, you know, between that and they did some audience testing, right? So they did some, you know, what is it, you know, they – got together they got a focus group together and you have the Real is obviously targeted at African-American women, right? That's who their main target demographic are. And so they found that educated Black women did not identify with Tamar Braxton. They felt that, you know, in so many terms, they felt that Tamar Braxton was too ghetto, right? But really what it is, really what the problem is, and a lot of people I've talked to have mentioned that Tamar Braxton overdid it. She took, you know, a lot of what they call Black gay slang, and she used that on the show. And some of the stuff she made popular, like to have several seats, right? Sort of thing. So she took all that slang, and she began to use it on the show. And a lot of audience members just couldn't identify with it, right? They couldn't. But then there are a lot of people who say they tuned in to The Real because of Tamar and that she made the show. So there's a huge she has a huge fan base out there that are saying, if Tamar Braxton ain't there, I'm not watching, right? And they think she makes the show. So this is like everything. And you know, a lot of people didn't think that the Real was even gonna make it past the first season, but it became, you know, hugely popular.
Well, they're taking a tremendous gamble because now they're doing what all these other shows do. They have to shake up their panels and try out guest co-hosts and all that. And it's a gamble. It's tiring. And, you know, I think that if you're going to be a producer on one of these shows, you have to know what the show is, who's on it, and who the viewers are. And, you know, now you're playing with a formula that is working, like you mentioned. It wasn't, like, you know, even really – slated to be a hit. It was more of like a chance they were taking, and the show does well, and it's fun to watch. And so for them now, you know, when they've hit their stride to screw everything up, I mean, the talk did the same thing. You know, the talk was lucky they benefited, but it's a gamble. It's a gamble.
Yeah. It is a gamble. And people have talked about, like, who would you get to replace it? Now, some people have said that Kiki Palmer, you know, the actress Kiki Palmer, might be a good replacement. Yeah, and she had a short-lived talk show, you know, just Kiki. But, you know, we've never seen her in this, like, this space. Because we don't really know Kiki Palmer, like, what are her views, her opinions on things of the world. Like, you really don't know that. So this would be an opportunity if she were brought on. They could test her out to see if that worked. And Kiki Palmer does have – she's, called Black Hollywood and that sort of thing. She's very popular among them. So she could really do well. People would like her. If she were added to the panel, so that, I mean, that would be the choice I would suggest, like, you know, to come in there and do some replacement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good idea.
You know, the other story here is that, you know, Tamar made the tweet, you know, regarding people stabbing her in the back, and then she unfriended everybody on social media. All of her hosts. I think the only person that she did unfriend was the sister actress, right?
Oh yeah.
Tamara. Tamara's the only one she didn't unfriend. So she unfriended, you know, Lonnie Love. She unfriended, you know, Janae and Adrian, yeah. Right?
So well, that, all I mean, of them. But that's ridiculous. Those girls had nothing to do with contract negotiations and behind the scenes antics. They're like the last people in line. I mean, unless it were someone like Sharon Osbourne who believes she has all this power, those girls can't get anybody removed. And Lonnie Love even said that when she had a little Facebook Live video, and she looked crazy in it, but she spoke her truth. And she even slammed Wendy Williams, and I think sometimes Wendy Williams needs a reality check, so I was kind of glad to see that.
Yeah.
Well, what would you do if they stepped up their game and they had Naomi Campbell on the panel?
Oh, well, I might tune in every day to watch it to see what was going on.
I don't doubt it.
She can bring an opinion and a point of view. I don't doubt it. Yeah, I would do that. Yeah. The only thing I would say that I would like to see the real do is because right now the real simply all they do is, you know, talk about love and romance and stuff like that. I wish that they would actually start to put in some more socially relevant topics, right? You know, into the discussions. I mean, since you have this panel, this panel of diverse people, this is where you can talk about police brutality. This is where you can talk about the presidential elections, right? This is where you have a Latino on there, talk about Donald Trump. What you think about that? You have an Asian on there, talk about some of these things. This is a way you can bring attention to all these different things that you might not have, you know, going on the talk. You might not have going on The View, but I can tell you that their audience out there would want to hear about what they call the whitewashing of some of those Japanime films. They'd want to talk about the Oscar stuff. I mean, they may have talked about it a little bit, but they have a platform to be able to talk about a lot of different topics that, you know, you might not be able to, you might not come up on ABC or, you know, or CBS or NBC or any of those. So, I mean, that's what I would do. I would step it up, you know.
Yeah, well, it sounds like in the fall they're going to have a little bit of a rebirth and a restructuring, so we shall see. We shall see.
You're listening to Grant's Rants. Please rate, subscribe, and share on iTunes and social media. Spread the word. There are a lot more rants to come. Follow us on Twitter at Grants_Rants. And now for the one-on-one.
We're back with founder and publisher at AN Publishing, David Adam Knoll. Glad to have you here talking about topics. I love that you're so passionate about daytime stuff because I get into it too. And I feel like it's like, you know, a lot of mainstream press doesn't really talk about it, but there's so much stuff that goes down and it's still television, it's still network, so there's a lot to say. But let's talk about what you're passionate about, and that's these digital brands and these digital magazines that you've been putting together. I mean, for as long as I've known you, you've been telling me, and I remember the original site for Man of the Hour magazine, and tell us a little bit about these brands and how they're different from one another. So you have three.
Okay, yes, I do. So let me just talk about sort of the founding. So The reason why I even decided to create digital media brands, you know, to provide content, and my content focuses on millennials, right? So millennials, that's what I'm developing content for, is number one, because I saw a lack of quality content, like targeted toward millennials, male or female. Everything is just always beauty, cars, sports, all these other things. And I realized that there are a lot of educated millennial men, millennial women, who are, you know, seeking a higher quality of life, right? They like nice things, right? They have stuff, they have, you know, they talk about politics, you know, they like to talk about their careers, you know. I mean, they like to dress well, they like to do all these different things. And so I really wanted to really just come up with, you know, some digital media brands that would really address the specific needs and the specific concerns and the specific interests of the millennial generation, which is very different than the baby boomer and very different than Generation X, right? Mm-hmm. And so you don't really see those needs being met by GQ, Esquire, Vogue, Green, and those sort of things. So that was kind of the reason why I came up. So my first brand was Man of the Hour. And so Man of the Hour is a men's lifestyle magazine catering to college-educated men, millennials, that is, but 25 to 35 in age, with our median age being 29. And basically, it covers everything from fashion, entertainment, politics, style, you know, economy, all just geared toward these educated, entrepreneurial men who are just, you know, pursuing to, you know, be their best that they can be in life. So I really want to walk them through every facet of that, right? So giving them, keeping them up to date with what's happening in the world of politics, keeping them up to date with what's happening in the world of fashion. Like, what are the latest styles? What can you wear, you know, to your job as the investment banker? What can you wear to your job at Facebook? You know, what can you wear to that? How can you do that? And just all the sort of social topics and cultural topics that would be of interest to our male readers. So it's very, you know, high quality content. We're not sitting around, you know, having the latest gossip. You know, those are sites that do that very well. We really want to focus this on quality content, fine wine, right, for our readers. And then the second property is Slow Me Down, which is geared for women, same age demographic, 25 to 35, educated women. And how we differ with Slow Me Down than a lot of the sort of women's digital media sites or even in print versions that exist out there is that we want to cater to women who want to be leaders. So Slow Me Down, which is French for top lady, right? You know, so, you know, you're on top. It really just caters toward these entrepreneurial women, these women who want to be in leadership roles, women who want to rise their career. So I like to say, we're not for the educated woman who just says, well, you know, I could be an accountant for the rest of my life. You know, I can do this job for the rest of my life. But this is the woman who wants to really go far, right? She wants to, you know, she wants to be, you know, the good Alexis Carrington, not the bad one, right? You know, she really wants to go there. She really wants to be a success in her life. And so we really want to cater a content, which is, you know, a lot of career content. There is fashion, beauty stuff, you know, related to that, entertainment stuff as well. But it really is just targeting this educated woman who obviously watches a lot of reality TV shows, because that's the main demo for, you know, for reality TV shows, so very educated women. But
this woman who just I didn't realize that. Very educated women are drawn to reality TV. Interesting.
Yeah. That's an interesting fact. I looked it up because one day I was trying to figure out who watches like the Real Housewives of Atlanta, right? And I did some research and it was like, well, their target demo is these very educated women, right? I mean, these women have degrees. And when they question, like, you know, like, well, don't you think that this image is bad? And they would say, no, I don't think that to me. They just found it entertaining. So I realized across, you know, reality TV spectrum, as I started to look, they're educated women who are watching these shows, women with degrees, women with careers who like watching these different things. So it's really interesting to know that there is this demographic of women who needs content catered to them, and, you know, in all different kinds of ways, and particularly millennial women, you know, who are just going out there and pushing themselves and doing whatever it is they want to do, making themselves successful. I really wanted to have something that was catering to that rather than some of the I would say some of the sites kind of play more to the victim narrative. And I wanted to move women away from, you're not a victim of everything because of your gender. Here are all the things you can do. Here's how you can get yourself to the next level. And so I want to empower women to just really be their success. Final digital media site, which is the latest one, which will be coming out in about July. It's called A Modern Treatise. And Modern Treatise is sort of a you know, if you think of Vanity Fair, you think of Town Country, you think of Forbes and Bloomberg. And really what it is, it's a site created so that people of color in the United States of America have a space to see, get tips about their careers, being entrepreneurs, talk about some of the social cultural issues that are of concern, see the who's who in different industries, because for any kind of, you know, whether you want to call them marginalized group or groups of individuals, when you don't see yourself reflected in things, you kind of feel like it doesn't exist. So I want to show them there are all these different kinds of people, Black, Asian, Latino, all these kind of people who exist who are doing all these wonderful things. Let me introduce you to those people if you don't know who they are, and lots of people don't. And then let me also give you tips so that you can go out there and make your own way, right? You can become the next, you know, Shonda Rhimes, right? You can become the next Tyler Perry or whoever it is. Like you can go out there and be that individual. So another site I want to empower people. So a lot of what I do across all my sites is empowering the men, empowering people of color, empowering women to really be their best, but also providing the most quality luxury content for you.
Well, that's really what drew me into reading the articles, because you're really catering not to the lowest common denominator like so many other things online. You know, you really have very thought-provoking articles, and you pull from Nielsen, and you look at analytics, and it's very interesting. Like we're just hearing about how very educated women enjoy something like Real Housewives. Like, that's the type of stuff that I'm finding in these articles. So they're interesting reads. It's not all like, oh yeah, well, you know, like white men like golf. Like, you know, it's nothing very, it's not that boring at all. You know, it's actually very interesting and thought provoking. And you definitely do speak to the higher end of life, the champagne life, which I can identify with, of course. I like that.
Champagne wishes and caviar dreams. We all have that. And I like to tell people this, what I'm doing reflects me, right? It reflects me. It reflects my upbringing, my household. It reflects that, right? I couldn't do anything that doesn't reflect me, my interests, my tastes. And I know that there are, you know, millions of other individuals out there, millions of other millennials who have the same taste, right? Who have the same interest, right? And they don't really have a space to go to get that reflected. So I really want to make sure that all of us, you know, have that high quality of content. Like I said, set the bar high, not low.
That's true. And all those brands are very all-inclusive. So you're really able to capture a lot of different eyeballs and readers that way. I mean, you're really covering, you know, you're covering really everyone that within that millennial bracket. I think it's great, and it must be a ton of work. So how did all of this come about?
Let's start with Man of the Hour, because Man of the Hour was the first one that came out. So look, I love magazines. I collect certain covers of magazines. I can tell you about the ins and outs of all magazines. Like, I can open it up and tell you why the ad is placed there, right? I can tell you why this article is here. I can tell you why this person's on the cover. And my friends were so annoyed with me always talking about this, and that they just said, you know what? You should start your own magazine. You know so much about this, you should do it. I said, oh, you know what? That's great. And then you see the power of the internet, right? You know, today, you know, you can, you know, a few clicks of the mouse, a little bit of coding or, you know, a development, and you could be up and running. And so I decided, well, I'm going to do this. So I took a 9-week summer course at San Francisco State, where it was all about magazine publishing and learn the ins and outs. And we had to, and during the course, we had to develop a mock magazine, right? And I said, oh, I'm going to come up with the magazine I want to do there. And the original title for it was Modern Gentleman, right? Mm-hmm. And I had one of the students was a friend of mine, and we were going to partner up together to really make Modern Gentleman, but he backed out later because he wanted to do something completely different. And so I just kept the idea, changed the name, right, and said, I got to come up with a new name so I don't get sued, right? I love my friend, but you never know. Money can change a lot of things. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I changed the name. And I changed the direction and focused strictly to millennials. And then I just spent the next 6 months planning what the content was going to be, what we were going to be covering, and then developing and building the very first site, you know, so that it was able to be out there. And then, you know, sought, you know, writers, which I have about writers, right, and an editor, and just started building from there, just slowly but surely, you know, developing content, building, learning, failing at some things, and being able to just change and understand where I needed to be at. So now I feel like I have all the building blocks. I've done, had the failure part of it that I needed to have. They always say you have to have, you can't succeed without failing to be able to do that. And so that just really got me started with Man of the Hour. So the moment I started doing Man of the Hour, I said, I'm going to do a woman's site, but I'm going to do that later. So I always had that in my head. And then once I got Man of the Hour up and running and I had it going really well, then I decided, you know what? Now it's time to do the woman's site. And so then that's when I started to work on So Madame and develop, you know, research. Since I'm a researcher, I will research things to death. I want to look at the competition, what's out there, what the market has, and I want to say, what can I bring new to it, right? If I'm showing clothes for women, you know, if I'm just showing some shoes and some bags and some makeup, then I'm not really doing anything different. So how can I be different? What can I do that's different? And I said, well, I'm going to make this about women being leaders. It's going to be leadership focused. And that came up. And then, you know, after getting that up and running, I had one more idea, which I said this will be my last idea, was to just do Modern Treatise, you know, that I want to do that sort of high-quality site, you know, that really, you know, presents the kind of content that people of color in America want to see, particularly those who are entrepreneurs, those who want to be successors in their life and doing that. And I believe, I clearly believe in the idea that if you see something out there or you see something that doesn't exist, create it yourself. Don't complain. Don't tell somebody else, please do this. Why don't you do that? I will go out there and fill that void. And that's what, that's how it all came about.
I love that. That speaks to the spirit of this show and the fact that you're able to do all this and you had a vision and you executed it yourself. And that especially, you know, what was interesting is you weren't turned off when your former partner in that class, you know, left the project. You were like, no, this is happening and I'm going to do my own thing. I'm going to protect myself. I'm going to go about it smart and I'm going to have completely put my vision out there. And I love that you've innovated it and made new projects out of it. I think it's wonderful. I really do. I want to talk a little bit about the size of the team that you work with, and is it a collaborative effort? I know you mentioned you had an editor and a few writers. How many are, what does it look like? What does this all look like behind the scenes?
Okay, so for each of the three sites, well, the new ones not there yet, but for each of the three sites, we have a total of six writers for each site. They cover specifics like society, entertainment, fashion, beauty for the women, music, you know, things like that. So we have six writers for each of the sites, and then I have an editor for each of the sites, and then I have one PR, you know, public relations rep who also covers the social media in, and then there's me. And so that's what the team says. Yeah. So it's a pretty good team behind there. And my writers live in different parts of the country, right? You know, so they're you know, we're talking to each other through our emails, through our through, you know, having phone conversations, we're having meeting, group meetings, all kinds of different things happening throughout the week, you know, looking at you know, at least, you know, coming up with stories and all these kind of expanded content. Now, currently, all, you know, all the sites are under redevelopment, and Man of the Hour will be back up next week. So it'll be rolling out slowly, you know, on the new platform next week. But that's a lot of what goes on. And I'm just an individual who can pull a story from air, right? Like I'm not only a writer, but I'm good at coming up with content ideas. So, I can just right off the bat come up with like 15 or 20 different article topics and find and figure out how you can apply that to our demographic, our reader. And I'm always about that. So, that's what I do working with the team, of writers who are very, you know, very good. And I go through a hard selection process, right? That's for writers. Like I don't take anybody who's had an English degree or anybody who says they do journalism. Like it's gotta be this specific person. They have to understand our audience. They have to know how to write it. So it's very clear like that. So
that's great. It's wonderful. What's great. The traffic like? And how has performance really kind of picked up over, you know, the evolution of these brands and the creation of them?
Man of the Hour evolved. I like to say evolved from starting at about a couple hundred a week to about 160,000 a week.
Wow.
Unique users coming to the site to check out content, right? So it was obviously the most, it's obviously been the most successful brand. So Madame has only been out for less than 9 months, but over the course of 9 months, it was moving up to 50,000 visitors a week, and now it's under redevelopment. And Modern Treatise is not here yet, but it's going to grow, and we're already working on building our social media presence on all of these sites, you know, at least for Modern Treatise, which is a new one, because we've started out pretty early. So I've taken all the lessons I've learned from Man of the Hour, applied it to Somedam, and now applying it to Modern Treatise. So, yeah.
That's wonderful. I mean, congratulations on your success. I mean, clearly, you know, they're definitely catching eyeballs, and you're, like you mentioned, you're catering to that audience that is untapped in certain aspects. I think that's great. Let's talk about the redevelopment. I want to promote these sites for you. So when can we expect to see the new and improved looks roll out?
Well, Monday, Man of the Hour, so not next Monday, Man of the Hour will be rolling, what's that, the 6th on this Monday, yes. The 6th, Man of the Hour will be slowly rolling itself out over the course of the month, all of the will be rolling out each week till we have everything kind of up and running. And then in the July, we will have a Modern Treatise. We'll roll out the first week of July. And then the first week of August, Somedam will reemerge itself. So that's kind of what's going to be happening there. And if people want to know more about the brands, they can go to anpublishing.com. And there they can see the media kits for each of the sites, they can get all the information they need to know. Obviously, you know, we are constantly receiving interest from, you know, brands and, you know, marketers out there who want to collaborate with us on different sort of products to try to reach the millennial. And we've been doing a very good job at really, you know, selling them why you need to get this millennial money. And one thing I like to say to people that's important is that when you're young, you are willing to buy whatever you feel you want at the moment, right? You don't really have established taste yet. So for the marketers out there, for the brands out there, they're trying to make you their lifetime customer. Now, your mom, your grandmother, they know everything they want to buy, right? They don't really try new things. They buy the same products. They buy the same from the same designers. They know what they want. They know what works for them. You don't know that yet. And so one of our major sales to these brands out there is that since they don't know, we're the place you can come to expose them to your brands, right?
100%. Brilliant. Yeah. So Somedam and Man of the Hour, you can actually still access these sites even though the new redesigns haven't rolled out, correct? So you can still go on there and read content and share it and share it on social media. So definitely check out these brands. I mean, they appeal to just about everyone, so I'm sure you can find something.
Yes, it is. Yes, sure you can. Yes.
So wonderful. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to promote? I mean, I know you have a lot going on. Having to get these redesigns together must be just like all your time and ton of work.
Yeah, yes, it does. It takes up my waking hours and all the time that I'm being done there. I guess, you know, what I would just like to promote to people is that we're going to have a ton of interviews coming out this year. And we're always, people who are listening, if you are an actress, an actor, if you're a musician, and you've got some good stuff, you can always submit it to our public relations. And if we think it's good, we might, you know, feature it in some of our content on there, you know. So we're always out there looking to discover, you know, the fresh talents as well. You know, it's you know, paying it forward as well as, you know, dealing with the established. So
wonderful. It sounds like you have such a great model going. I mean, we've talked for so long and I didn't even know all this information. So I'm learning as well as everybody else of all that you've got going on. I can only imagine it must be a lot to manage such a team like that. But you've found so much success that it just kind of keeps going, you know, you can't stop now. So I'm glad to hear that. Thank you for coming on and continuing the spirit of Grant's Rants about getting it done yourself and saying it like you mean it, knowing what you're talking about, and really, like you mentioned, being that smart, educated millennial that knows what's going on and knows what's up.
So, yes, that's right. Yes.
Thank you for all the information. I really do encourage everyone to check out these sites, and you can find the information in the links beneath this episode.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I'd love to come back again.
Sounds good. Will do. All right, folks. Thank you very much for supporting Grant's Rants. Look out for new episodes. And don't forget to check out BidChat, where Grant's Rants Hollywood Live will be premiering soon. We'll look out for those dates for you.
This has been Grant's Rants. Follow us on Twitter at Grants_Rants. Cover art created by Howie Roney. Voiceover by Sir Richard Wentworth. Original theme music composed by Alexander Arnson.